Welcome to the first episode of Guardians of Planet Earth, a programme where we meet people across the world dedicating their lives to standing up against environmental destruction. I'm Katie Dancy Downs, and for this episode, I travelled to Kenya to meet the winners of the Lush Spring Prize 2018 Influence Award, African Biodiversity Network, or ABN for short. ABN has a network across Africa and focuses on indigenous knowledge, ecological agriculture, and biodiversity-related rights, policy, and legislation. I met Simon Mitambo, the general coordinator of ABN, and I said I wanted to know more about ABN's role in protecting sacred natural sites and some of the communities actively involved. So he took me to Tharaka, where he grew up, to meet indigenous communities facing the threat of a megadam. I started by asking Simon about a piece of legislation ABN's been instrumental in getting passed, Resolution 372, which ensures the protection of sacred natural sites and territories. ABN's been really involved in getting the Resolution 372 passed, hasn't it? So could you explain what that is?
Yeah, Resolution 372 is a resolution made by African Commission on Human and the People's Rights. So as one of the players in the indigenous knowledge and one of the organizations that has worked very extensively with the sacred natural sites, which again are areas that have ecological, cultural and spiritual importance, it became very imperative that we needed a law or a resolution that really protect these species, because their destruction is leading to a lot of loss of biodiversity. This is how we got to engage. We've been speaking to elders who came together and they said that we need to have them protected. It has been a long process, and recently last year, we got that recognition and the protection through that Resolution 372 of the African Commission that state that there is need to protect sacred natural sites as spaces of great ecological, spiritual and cultural importance.
So what will happen if those sacred natural sites are damaged?
They are places of ecological importance. First of all, ecologically, we'll be losing a lot of biodiversity. At the moment, we are aware that during the period when Industrial Revolution started to present, this is when we have lost the highest level of biodiversity, to the extent where now we are talking of the sixth extinction. So this is how these places are very critical at this particular moment. Then we're also talking about cultural and spiritual. The indigenous people look upon these places as places where they go to do their ceremonies. This is the spaces where they go to connect with the ancestral spirit and to heal their community and to build their relationships. So for them, they are very critical. They look at them like churches where they go to pray, to do their ceremonies, to bring peace to their land and things like that.
We're about to meet some communities here in Tharaka, aren't we? So could you just explain to me who these communities are and what the relevance is with the sacred natural sites?
The communities that we are going to meet in Tharaka, first of all, they have played a great role in writing up of the recommendations to the African Commission to have that resolution. We have used their knowledge, ideas to present them to the African Commission. Majority of them, they are the custodians of this sacred site. They are the ones who take care of this sacred site, either by way of going to do the ritual at the sacred site, by way of reporting those who come to destroy, by way of lobbying and campaigning against the destruction of the sacred site. So they are a very critical community in relation to the sacred natural site.
Elders from different clans in the local area have just performed a traditional song for me. Together, they've been working on eco-calendars and eco-maps to plot out what this area was like in the past, what it's like now, and how they want it to look in the future. The maps have become tools to help the community claim back sacred natural sites, and the calendars help people understand the natural movements of animals and allow them to live respectfully alongside wildlife. Venancio, who's not an elder himself but a coordinator of the group, is going to show me those maps and calendars. So this is your eco map.
This is the first map of the Taraka. The first one, when the area was very green, at first, Taraka was the area evergreen. Everything was very cared for. We are honored that areas we call sacred areas. We honor that. We respect those areas because it was very holy. We term this to be very holy. People should not distract it, should respect it, because these are the areas where people marked as they can implicate something good or bad if you tamper with. This is the eco mapping, the first map where we have environments very good, very conducive, very green. The harvest was abundant, so people could not be affected by the hunger or drought because the environment was conducive to attract rain. You see, these are the people who are celebrating. They are celebrating
there's a picture the culture.
Yes,
their house,
yes, they are celebrating because they have harvested all over. They have abundant harvest, so they have to celebrate. They have to call their neighbors, their friends, so that they can celebrate together.
So what we see on this map here, how long ago would this have been true?
From 60 to 40 years ago.
So most people now probably won't remember it looking like this, will they?
These are the people who are, at that moment, they were very young at the moment. That's why we include both young and old people. Yeah, this is the Meru National Park where all the trees, the forest animals and what have you, they are in this route.
These and that's where all the animals have been taken now, to the national park?
Yeah, there are so many.
And the rhino, you're pointing at a rhino there.
Rhino, yeah.
They have those in the national park, but not here.
Yes, there is. That's how it is for the first map.
Okay, so that's the map.
Yeah.
And then this is a map of, it says present. Taraka present eco map.
That's a present.
This is what it's like now.
This is the situation now we are now. So you see, there is a lot of trees. Trees have been cut along the sacred site. Trees have been fallen down. There is no a lot of green because there is no enough rain. People burning the charcoal, cutting the trees, the destructive.
The deforestation.
Yeah, deforestation.
And I barely see any animals. And
on top of
maybe some over there, but
yes, those are birds. The animal in the mountains.
Animals in the mountains.
In mountains. This is the mountain where we can get some snakes, little animals. To survive, because that's where you can get forest. Yes.
And then this down here at the National Park.
This is the National Park down here.
There's giraffes, antelopes,
baboons. These are the area. The National Park is here now. But the other side, there isn't. People are still starving because of there is no enough rain. There is not an abundant harvest. We are expecting something to be improved. That's why we come to the future, something good.
Okay, so Taraka future eco map.
Future eco mapping. Yes. That's what we want to be in the future time.
So this looks a little bit like the first one, but it's got electricity pylons.
There is electricity. Of course, we have to develop.
Yeah.
You have to have all those. There is electricity, tarmac, but the area is evergreen. You have trees, you see. When we plant indigenous trees, it will cope with climate conditions because these are the trees used to this climate. For the present, some rivers have dried up, but we ought to regain it to be a permanent river as it was before. Sacred site of Kibuka, it is there.
Kibuka, so that's Kibuka. Where the dam's going to be built.
Yeah.
And there's no dam on your future map there. So the future, you hope, there is no dam.
There is no dam.
In
the future, there is no dam because we expect something very conducive and natural things.
And I see in the middle there a lion, there's a leopard up the top.
Yes.
There are lots of people looking happy.
Yes.
Lots of trees.
Yes. They are very happy. You see, animals, they are very happy because they have somewhere to hide themselves. The future time, everything will be very okay, very interesting. People will be celebrating for the future things, which we expect good things.
I've just met Sabella, who's an elder from the Gankina clan. She's keen to talk to me, so we're going to sit down in the shade while Simon translates between Kitharaka and English.
In your whole life living in Taraka, how has the landscape, how has the area changed?
She says that the changes that have taken place relate to the coming of the foreigners, people who have not grown here. When they come, they don't understand the traditions here. Sometimes they come and they buy land, and then when you buy land, that land is yours. The tradition here requires that you don't cut trees near the river. But those who come, they go and cut, you know, they don't understand the traditions here. So they begin now to destroy the parian. And even she's talking about the mining. She says there are certain stones that were green, and for them, they didn't know that those were like minerals. But when people came here, they realized these are minerals, and then they started mining and destroying the environment. So these are some of the changes that she has experienced since she was born. The other change relates with the relationship of people and the sacred site. Those people who came and did not understand the tradition of the territory, or they have not taken time to learn from the people, they destroy the sacred natural site. Sometimes when you buy the land and then there is a sacred site in that land, then you don't observe the rituals that are done. This has been a problem. And sometimes when they do that, of course, you know there is a way the sacred site reacts, and then you don't see the same people again. So all these things are happening because of mixing of people and then failing to have people learn about the tradition or respect the tradition of the place.
So this is an issue really with people coming to the area and not appreciating the indigenous knowledge, not being willing to learn, and then not knowing enough about the area, whereas the indigenous people know so much about the area. So what exactly are you doing to protect your sacred natural sites?
So what they are doing is that the elders, who are the custodians, are taking their responsibilities to keep checking and guarding to see that there are no people who are coming to destroy. They use a goat to do the ritual of cleansing the site. The other strategy they are using to protect sacred site is also to bring youth on board, so that after maybe the elders pass on, then at least the knowledge is transferred to the young generation, and so that the practice of the protection of the sacred site can continue even to the future generation.
Simon translated for me as I talked to the rest of the elders. I asked why the natural world is so important to their community. Paul from the Mbura clan answered first.
He's also giving an example of a certain bird called Dieri. It's a white bird. It communicates when it makes sound. It communicates that something is wrong. And mostly it communicated when there were elephants.
Sibella, the elder I spoke to earlier, told me more about how the indigenous communities here listen to nature and learn from it.
Certain hills here, there is one hill called Intuge. How it communicates when the rain is coming, she says that you see some smoke, some mist. So it's a sign that the rain will be sufficient. There's also another hill called Nyambene, which shakes all. It's like a earthquake. You feel like some shaking, and that's also a communication that the rain will be sufficient. Then she is also giving some examples of certain plants that also send the message of whether there will be enough rain or not. And then she is also talking about the sun. The position of the sun will tell also if the rain is going to be sufficient or not.
The elders have told me a little bit about the rituals they use to protect the sacred natural site, and what they've said is that this usually involves sacrificing a goat. This kind of ritual is obviously so far from my own culture that it's quite difficult to understand how that would be so important. So I talked to Sibella to ask her about the story behind their sacred natural site, which is a waterfall called Kabuka, and she told me that the name comes from a mysterious person. She described him as a kind of diviner who was also called Kabuka.
There was one couple of people who were barren for a long time. They could not get a child. So one night when it was raining, with a lot of lightning and a lot of thunderstorm, when the rain became a bit less, then they heard the voice of a baby crying outside in the rain, crying. And you see that name, Kubuka, means crying. That is when the woman went out to see where was that baby who is crying. And then she found a boy in the middle of the rain and they picked the baby and they came back with the baby in the house. And when they came back and the woman started to breastfeed, then the following day, people were wondering, where have you gotten this baby from? She said, this is my kibuka, this is my cry child. Whenever people asked where she had gotten the baby from, she just said, this is my cry child, this is my kibuka. In accordance with the Raka traditions, when children grow, especially boys, they go through a number of rite of passage. The first rite of passage was supposed to be performed on the boys of his age, and he was also supposed to be part of that. And when the time came, they didn't understand how he disappeared. When the other boys were coming back from rite of passage, which takes 4 days, then Kibuka also appeared. He appeared having gone through the same rite of passage, but he didn't understand how that happens. So he did a number of very many mysterious things. When the second rite of passage came also, the same case, he disappeared and he came back having gone through the rite of passage, and he appeared like he understood everything. And it went like that until he grew up, and then he married and established a family. And that is during the time when the Raka community was fighting with enemies. And so he volunteered one of his sons to lead the warriors from the Raka. And he performed some magic where he operated the sun on the chest. And he put a horn, you know, the horn of a goat, and he put it there. And that horn was protecting. So when they went into the war, which they were using spears, he could not die. So the enemy thought it would be good to investigate what is happening. And so they held captive one of the members of the community who revealed the secret and said that once you remove that horn, he will die completely. And when Kibuka's son was killed, he was very angry with the Raka people. He descended to migrate where he was living with all his property, his livestock, his cows, his goats, the route which he followed up to where now we have the sacred site. And the whole of that place where he followed has become a seasonal river.
Simon wants to show me the sacred natural site that the elders talked about. So, along with Sabella and Venancio, we're on the way to the waterfall, Kibuka, where the Kenyan government is planning to build a 165-kilometer-square megadam. The High Grand Falls Dam is part of the government's 1,000-dam project. And it's intended that it's going to provide hydroelectricity, clean water, and to be used for irrigation. But building this dam will displace thousands of people in Tharaka and have an impact on the wildlife here, as well as eradicating habitats. Simon, explain why you've brought me here.
This place is called Kibuka Falls. It is one of the sacred national sites that the custodians we were discussing with are protecting. At the moment, there is a threat by the government to build a mega project dam here, which is the flagship of the Vision 2030. Vision 2030 aims to make Kenya a mineral industrialized economy country. They are planning to build a big dam. Quite a number of some people will be displaced from this place, and especially for the Raka, it is actually consuming half of that community. Some people are in support because they want to be given money. Others are against. Of course, majority are against. We are waiting, yes, to see what will happen, but I know that custodians are very concerned.
And you said that the Tharaka community could be displaced by this dam, so what would happen to them if the dam was built?
Yeah, most likely what will happen is that If people are given money for compensation, they are expecting to go out there and look for land elsewhere to buy. And you know the community are usually challenged, either because of the school fees and other economic needs. Sometimes they end up spending that money on those other needs for food, for fees. And then most of those people end up by being landless people. Some of them get into town, and that is why we have mushrooming slums in Africa. Because some of these people, when they get displaced with that money, they end up using the money and then they go to town to look for jobs that are not forthcoming, and then they end up in the slums. So that is the most likely. And the other challenge is that sometimes when people know the government is compensating people, then the land where they are likely to buy goes up also.
And presumably with those people goes all the indigenous knowledge, and it's just lost.
Obviously. And that is also even a very serious factor, because when you lose the land in terms of indigenous knowledge, when you lose the land, you lose your cultural identity, you lose your ancestral connection, you become homeless actually in that sense.
And this dam that's been proposed is to provide electricity and irrigation. What other suggestions would you have for better ways of doing those things?
The government can generate power from even geothermal and other renewable sources. In Kenya, like here in Tharaka, we have a lot of sun, we have a lot of wind. All these can generate power. There are alternatives, yes, usually.
And so what are people around here doing to stop this megadam being built?
What I know is that the community is being mobilized to understand. But like I said, the community is divided. I know the majority are against the dam, and that is why they have also lobbied. Actually, they have lobbied their political leaders. I remember the first time when the World Bank was about to fund the dam, the area senator, who is a professor, Kindiki, wrote to the World Bank on the behalf of the community, rejecting the proposal for funding, and from that time the World Bank withdrew. And even at the moment, the community has also lobbied their political leaders. They have pressurized the government to redesign. They said that even if it has to be built, not to that big extent where it is actually displacing almost half of the community.
Venancio, what does this place mean to you?
We believe it is a sacred site, because we have so many phenomena that will happen in this area, whereby we know there is a man called Keboka who entered in this area together with his family. He has powers in our community. That's why we respect the area. We call it after the name of the person, Keboka, because it was the name of the person. We own this site because we have seen a lot of things happening in this site. For example, don't get rain, for example, some drought comes. We can do a lishos here, then the rain comes in. On top of that, this is the area where this person was living together with his family. This is the area where the dances has been performed. This is the area where the family was coming out of the liver to dance with our community, and then they enter again. Why can't you see it? This is something very unique from others, because some people come out, they dance with us, then they enter again. It's a very unique area. We respect it, we honor it as it is in this place.
So it sounds like it's incredibly important, this sacred natural site to your people. So that must be incredibly upsetting to hear that a megadam might be built here.
Yes, all the people in our community here, we respect the site because it is very holy for sure. There are some things has been tried to be performed in this area, but they have never been because of those powerful things here. People think that they can construct a dam of which they don't believe in it, because they say that this area has its power to destruct it. So they cannot believe whether that construction can take place. So people, they don't appreciate of having a dam. Mm. Most of them, they don't appreciate.
You don't think the dam will happen?
This site have powers. They have sacred things. Supernatural being is living in this area. So maybe it can work on it. It can work on that construction of the dam. Yeah.
So you feel that because your community believes this supernatural being lives in this site, that it won't let the government build the dam.
Yeah, if they attempt to build, supernatural being might do something else. It can distract. We know sacred sites speak themselves. They defend themselves. So they might act by defending themselves.
We're sitting on a rock at the top of the river in front of the waterfall. And I want to talk to Sabella about how her community feels about this megadam. Does all your community agree with you that the dam shouldn't happen, or are there some different opinions?
Most of the people, majority of the people, are against the dam because even the land here has not been given, has not been adjudicated in a way that, you know, you can say this is my land and then you can be compensated. So if maybe the government want to evict them, then it is also possible that they can be evicted without even any compensation, because there isn't that title deed you can claim that this is your land.
Today, Simon's taking me to meet another group of elders in Tharaka. These people are all members of the Society for Alternative Learning and Transformation, or SALT for short, which has an informal relationship with ABN, and they're both partners of Gaia. Simon's told me that these elders were part of developing Resolution 372, and they'll also be doing their own mapping process with Gaia soon. The elders here have just welcomed me with a traditional prayer in their traditional dress and beadwork, which they're reviving. They're also involved in maintaining African cosmology, and of course they're protecting indigenous knowledge related to the land as well. So I'm going to start by talking to Salome.
Salome, tell me, why is it so important for people to protect indigenous knowledge?
Because we have lost the knowledge how to take care of our rivers. Now our rivers are dry because we are harvesting the rains. You know the rains that help to hold the water along the river? So when we go to harvest, there is a traditional way how they were harvested. But now because we have lost this knowledge, we don't harvest very well, and that is why we don't have those trees that can hold the water.
I asked another elder, Karabrina, why it's so important to protect indigenous knowledge.
So we are doing this so that we preserve our culture, so that we don't also lose our culture. She's very happy about this initiative because it will also help us to preserve our culture and our heritage.
The sacred site we went to yesterday doesn't belong to these people we're meeting here today. Each clan has a site that is connected to them specifically. Mwamba, who I'm about to speak to, has been involved in rituals at his own sacred natural site, so I want to talk to him about just what that involves.
So I'd like to know what the ritual involves. Could you describe it to me?
So they use a goat, which they kill them, and then they also do a similar process of spitting for blessings. And then that also makes the rain come, because it's very much about restoring the relationships with the ancestors, with the collective community.
And how often do you do this ritual?
Only when it has been desecrated. And one way to desecrate, either someone can go and cut trees there, or go and burn there, or go and do something evil there. So that is when now they go to cleanse it. They bring a goat. The person who is caught doing that, if he is cutting trees, he is asked to bring a goat of one color. And then they carry their honey, the one they were using for blessings. And that is now what they use now for ingredients to do the ritual ceremony. It is only when it has been desecrated. Other times, if it is not desecrated, then they don't go to do the ritual. They only go to do the ritual for cleansing.
I'm now going to speak to Zachary, another one of the elders, to find out what he thinks about Resolution 372.
What do you think this Resolution 372, to protect sacred natural sites, what do you think that does to support you in protecting these areas.
Such a row is very useful. It will help to protect all the sacred sites, not only here, everywhere in the world. It is very important that these sacred sites and the rituals, they are protected.
And yesterday we went to a waterfall where they're planning to build a mega dam. If that does go ahead and your community is displaced because of it, what impact is that going to have on your community and your way of life?
Sacred sites are connected, and that sacred site is like the main one.
There are other sacred sites there, like Yigare and Ruga. So when they touch that one, obviously other places will also be affected. So it's not only that Iskiboka which has been touched, but all the other places will be affected.
So it's not just your community that will be impacted, it's all the communities that are connected to each other.
It is everywhere that will be affected. And you see that also will set a bad precedent, because now like them, they are protecting their sacred site, and it will be very bad to see one sacred site now being destroyed.
To end my visit in Tharaka, I want to hear from Simon about what he thinks the world needs now. So I'm going to start by asking him about what the next step is for Resolution 372.
So what we are doing at the moment, we are developing what we are calling African Model Law. It is like developing a framework that when all the other nations now come to integrate the spirit of the Resolution 372, which recognizes the protection of the sacred site, so people have a framework that they can borrow from. And then we are also doing to do a booklet of principles which underpin how that resolution can be implemented. With the other organizations that are involved, we have drafted this constitution, this African Model Law. Then from there, we are expecting to present it to the 63 ordinary session of the African Commission this year. Assuming we'll get it approved, which we hope so, then it means that we'll be lobbying all the African states, and especially where IMBN work, to have them make that law.
So you've talked about Africa and how there could be this framework. Will you then present that to other countries globally?
Even what we are writing about the African Model Law is actually borrowed from precedents from Latin America. That is not to mean that this is going to be confined in Africa here. We expect that it can also be a precedent that other places like Latin America, Europe and others can also borrow.
What does the world need to do to be able to regenerate nature and to really protect nature?
In my opinion, we need to borrow a lot from indigenous traditions. We know that indigenous traditions were very much interconnected with their natural environment. They were very cautious even when they went to cut trees. And if you look also at how we were building our houses, we were building our houses in a way that when they fall, they can regenerate. We are talking about regeneration in terms of ecological and also cultural. Everywhere in the world, even in Europe, the indigenous communities of Europe were very connected to their nature, so that everything, we were living in harmony. Of course, it is not possible to bring it the way it was, and it is not possible to throw away everything that we have learned. But it's a question of how do we live very creatively with what we have now and what we need also to go and achieve. So regenerative development for me would mean borrowing from those traditions that were highly regenerative.
It's time to leave Tharaka and to say goodbye to Simon. What Simon said about borrowing from indigenous traditions and knowledge makes a lot of sense, and it's clear all the people I've met here are very connected to nature. When we're talking about applying these lessons in regeneration, we could be talking about sacred natural sites as we have done here. But we could also be talking about what's on our own doorsteps.
Ao, ao ya, ende muru yendo, ujaga makumbi. Ao, ao ya ende ngokintamba gana irima.
Aho, aho ya ende ngokintamba gana irima.
Aho,
ee,
aho,
ee,
ne moruyo.
Nduja makume.
Aho,
ee,
awe,
ee,
ende ngokintamba
gana irima.
Aho, aho ya eje eje tu ya ukire kuduya.
Aho, aho ya eje eje tu ya ukire kuduya.
Aho, aho ya ya kuru vetu para ukire kudenga.
Aho, aho ya ya kuru vetu para ukire kudenga.
Aho, aho ya ya kuru vetu para ukire wamina.
Aho, aho ya ya kuru vetu para ukire wamina.
Aho, aho ya ya ale vetu para ukire wamina.
Aho, aho ya ya ale vetu para ukire wamina.
Awe, awe,
ya
de moruyo.
Duya la magume.
Aho,
aho,
ningogi.
Kambaga na irema.
Mwela lingwa, cheki angige, jeno kaya, boli moche, edha kara, ginda kara.
African Biodiversity Network won the Influence Award at the 2018 Lush Spring Prize, hosted by Lush and Ethical Consumer Research Association. The annual prize supports projects across the world that are working towards environmental and social regeneration, with a £200,000 prize fund distributed between 11 projects across four categories. To find out more, visit springprize.org. Or to find out more about ABN, visit africanbiodiversity.org. Thank you for listening to this Lush Times documentary.